Hello, Star Trek fans, and welcome to the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast. My name is Kim.
And my name is James.
And we are watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine from the beginning, one episode at a time. Welcome back to the podcast. Today we are on Season 1, Episode 17, entitled Dramatis Personae. This episode aired May 30th, 1993. I looked up what the title of this episode means, and it says, The Masks of the Drama, the main characters in a dramatic work written in a list.
Ah.
So that would have been good to know. I didn't look it up before the episode. I looked it up after, because I actually didn't want to know until the episode was done.
Well, this is one of the episodes that I remember it vividly, though it's great revisiting this one, certainly for me.
Awesome. Before we dive into this episode, is there anything you want to talk about from the previous podcast?
No, it was perfect.
I still don't understand what the title means. Forsaken was the title. I still don't get it. And that whole computer science-y stuff part of that episode was crappy. I think they should have just kept the whole episode in the elevator with Odo and Loxana. That could have been more interesting.
Like the episode of The Next Generation, where Picard is trapped in the elevator with kids.
Oh, I love that one. We're all gonna die.
That was a good one. I enjoyed that.
The whole episode, though, didn't take place in the elevator. But what was interesting about that episode was it had all these separate stories that were going on because they couldn't communicate with each other. So yeah, that was cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Should we start on this episode?
Why not?
We open on the outside of the station, and for the first time, I actually noticed the discoloration that you're always talking about. Part of me is like, now, this is just another way Deep Space Nine brings in purple.
Oh, nice way of looking at it.
Purple and pinks.
Look at the positive. The well, I actually also have an observation about that as well, which is, so I've been watching it between Hulu and Netflix.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch it on Netflix, they've applied a more aggressive filter to the NTSC video. So it looks softer. And if you watch it on Hulu, then it looks like they haven't used an aggressive setting on their encoding filters. And you can actually see dot crawl on the letters. Any time where there is, like, the opening credits is a good example, where you're seeing the yellow letters on a dark background, you can actually see dot crawl on the letters. And it's slightly sharper in terms of the image. So there's a little fun fact for people.
Is it fun?
Well, it is if you're interested in video like me.
I know at least one person who listens to this podcast who is very interested in that topic. It's not me, but there is one person who's commented on it.
Although now you could argue it's an extremely obsolete video standard.
Yes, well, it's a show from the 90s.
That's true.
So we do what we have to.
Plus, this leads on to my call for, I want to see a fully restored Deep Space Nine in the original 35mm.
Okay.
Write to CBS now.
Sure. I see a lot of talk on Reddit about that. Not about that specific thing that you said, but about them doing a touch-up to the show.
Yeah, I'd love to see the original 35mm.
Anyway, should we get started?
Yeah, we should probably talk about the show.
Okay. Sisko is in his office looking at a screen with a bunch of gibberish on it and an image of the station. He's typing some things onto a data pad and looking at the screen as if there's really something on that screen. They do that so much on this show where there's nothing on that screen. But anyway.
They gotta look convincing.
Yeah, the door chimes and in marches Kira. She's upset because she just received word that a Valerian transport has requested permission to dock. Before Kira can continue, Sisko interrupts her and says, "Let me guess, you're here to recommend we deny the request." Kira points out that the Valerians ran weapons-grade dolomite to Cardassian forces during the occupation of Bajor, which Sisko is aware of. Kira says she believes they're continuing to ship weapons to the Cardassians that could eventually be used against Bajor. This is sounding a lot like a very 90s plot.
Yes.
About selling weapons.
Do you think that Sisko was being a little bit too by the book here? We know these people have a questionable background in their trading, but he's taking sort of this odd Federation approach of believe the best in people.
Yes, I think there is something to that. And I do have a little more to say about that as we go a little farther along here.
Okay.
Sisko shares her concern, but says there's no proof of this happening. Kira is convinced the proof is in the ship. And oh, she's getting really angry and animated at this point. She wants to conduct a search for dolomite and confiscate what she finds. Sisko's afraid it's not that simple because dolomite is also used for power generators, reactors, and short-range transports. It's only used for weapons if it's extremely pure. Kira is perplexed and she says, "So we're just going to do nothing?" He says, "I'm just saying we can't board their ship and start tearing it apart. If Kira can bring him evidence that the Valerians are dealing in weapons-grade dolomite, then the Federation will use diplomatic pressure to stop them," which sounds a little useless.
Yeah.
But he says it will work if the Valerians want to continue trading with the Federation. So Kira says, all right. She's surprisingly serene, I thought, at this point. We'll try it your way, she says. And Cisco's like, good. See to it that they're cleared for docking. She says, yes, sir, and leaves.
Yeah, well, she seems at least satisfied with it. I mean, Cisco gave a justification for his actions and gave an alternative path that they can follow. So I think he was playing it a little bit too much by the Federation book, but it isn't unreasonable.
By the way, both Valerian and Dolomide are actually things in the real world. So often on this show, they just make words up, but Valerian is a plant and Dolomide is a medication. I
thought it was like a movie from the 70s.
Close. It's very close. All right, now we go to Ops, and Dax is telling Miles that there's a subspace message from Keiko that they've arrived safely on Bajor. Apparently, she took the school kids to visit a grain processing center, which I immediately was on edge thinking, why have we taken all the children off of the station?
I guess this is just another excuse not to have Keiko on the show.
Yeah, I guess so. So she took them on a field trip. She got them on the bus and took them on a field trip. Kira comes out of Cisco's office behind Dax and stomps down the steps, and her jaw is really set in anger. So even though she seemed to leave satisfied, she still is looking a little irritated.
Yeah.
Then Odo comes up the elevator, handing a data pad to Kira. It's the info she requested on the captain of the Valerian ship. Kira says to let her know if he finds anything, and he nods and starts to leave just as Dax announces that something is coming through the wormhole. She puts it on screen and everyone watches the wormhole open and a ship come through. Dax immediately calls Cisco, saying the Klingon vessel Tokat has returned a month early. They open hailing frequencies just as the ship blows up, shaking the whole station. Miles says there was a transporter signal just as the ship exploded. They all look at the little spot in Ops where all sorts of bad things get beamed over. A red light kind of flashes, but no one materializes. Miles is saying something's interfering, and Dax starts in on the sciencey stuff, saying things like, we have to boost the annular containment field. By the way, Memory Alpha calls it the annular confinement field, but she says containment, and the closed caption says containment. And like all Star Trek geeks, I just like things to be right.
Oh, okay.
Anyway, they do manage to beam over a big Klingon dude who falls to the ground grunting. Bashir runs over to him and sees that he's been hit by weapons fire, and it's severe. We have to get him into cryostasis, he says.
Yep.
But the Klingon leans forward and dramatically says, victory, with his very gross yellow teeth quite prominent on my TV screen. And then he falls backwards and he dies. Sisko looks concerned, and we go into the theme song.
Well, first of all, we got to see here how O'Brien is the transporter genius, showing off his transporter skills a little bit more.
Yes. From all that practice on the Enterprise.
Yeah, exactly. And did you notice the dying Klingon grabbing Bashir? I mean, didn't we just have this happen? I mean, shouldn't Bashir be standing like 2 foot back going, yeah, I remember what happened last time.
Remember the passenger, yeah. Vantika? That is a good point.
Yeah.
I did not notice that. But yeah, we just had that happen. Yes.
I can't remember. Is this a theme of the show of people dying and grabbing Bashir?
Well, it's happened twice in 17 episodes. Although, again, I say, why are we beaming stuff right into Ops? It just seems so unsafe. Yeah. And they never, like, say, you know, put up a containment field or anything. They just beam things right over there.
Yep. Although, so on a very positive note, it was a very good death for a Klingon. I mean, he died of his wounds from battle. He achieved victory at the very end. I mean, his place in Stovacor is absolutely assured.
Well, I don't know. From my perspective, it seems like he abandoned ship.
Defeating his enemies in doing so.
Did he? At this point, we don't know that. Oh. We don't know anything about why he just suddenly appeared.
Well, he thought he achieved victory, so
apparently
I'm going
he did,
with...
Yes.
He's pretty convinced he's got victory.
Cisco is giving a station log, and it's Stardate 46922.3. And as much as I hate to point this out, the star date in the previous episode was 46925.1, which is after this date. So this happened before The Forsaken, but aired after.
Oh.
I'm all over the details today. I don't know why. He says the dead Klingon was named Han Teal, and he was first officer of the ship that exploded. Why he died and the cause of the ship's destruction is unknown. In Ops, Bashir found traces of tritanium alloy fragments in his chest and upper arms, but that wasn't what killed him. It was the weapon's burns. They were too severe. He's running a microtissue analysis to try and identify the weapon used. Kira wonders why he said victory before he died. Yes, that's what I would like to know too. This is a good question. Dax says that according to Klingon High Command, that ship was in the Gamma Quadrant on a routine biosurvey mission. That does not sound like something a Klingon would be too interested in doing.
Yeah. And it doesn't seem like a path to victory.
It doesn't, exactly. And continuing on my afternoon of being a geek, I Googled biosurvey and I found that a biosurvey or biological survey is a scientific study of organisms to assess the condition of an ecological resource. That does not sound very Klingon.
Yeah, that doesn't sound very high on the Klingon's list of exploration priorities.
No, very suspicious.
Yeah. It's quite clear here as well that Sisko is not 100% convinced that this was just a survey.
Right. Odo chimes in that he recalls that ship putting in for a maintenance check, which I guess is how they knew they were not due for a month. Sisko tells Odo to ask around the station to see if he can learn anything about this biosurvey. In other words, go ask Quark. And Odo heads out. Then he tells Dax and Miles to take a runabout and look for the ship's mission recorder, which I guess is like the black box.
Yeah.
He wants to know what caused the ship to explode, and everyone heads off on their tasks. But Dax remains sitting, and she starts to smile like she just remembered an inside joke or something. And then Miles calls to her from the elevator, and she's like, oh yeah, haha, never mind, and joins him on the elevator. It was very peculiar and suspicious, but nobody seemed to notice or care.
She seemed very oddly distracted.
Yeah.
And then when she does that bit, when she sort of stands up and giggles to herself,
yes,
it was like, that was the first indication of something's up.
Well, and in Star Trek, you should always take note when somebody suddenly does something out of character.
Yeah.
It always, always, always means something.
Well, it's great when you get the characters built up to the point that you can look for the little tells that something's going on.
Right. She joins Miles in the elevator and she crosses her arms, still kind of smiling as the elevator goes down. It's all very weird.
Well, the other option is perhaps she was just sitting there thinking, no, you go ahead, Miles. I'll take the stairs. I'll get there quicker. You're in the slow lift.
Yeah, right. Next, we show the shuttle flying across the station. But then we go to Kira swearing at a console saying, not yet. She gets a hail from the Valerian vessel, Shirval Das, and puts it on screen. This guy looks a little like a melted version of Goofy from Disney. Did you notice? That's my best description.
No, I did not notice that. That's a.
We don't get a really good look at him, but he has this vague cartoon dog look.
Oh.
Anyway, he says his ship is entering the Bajoran system and needs clearance to dock. Kira says there's going to be a slight delay in a bit of a snarky tone, and Goofy seems irked, saying they've been on a long journey and require maintenance. It's a Jiffy Lube, so they probably need an oil change.
Now, if this race was a potential threat to the Bajorans because they've been running weapons to the Cardassians, why would the Bajorans even allow them access to their system? This wouldn't even be Sisko's decision. Surely the Bajoran government would go, yeah, you're not coming in.
Yeah, we are a little hand-wavy here for sure.
Yeah.
And we never really explain anything about why they would allow it or what was going on or if they were providing some kind of rare resource as part of trading. There's just no reason given.
Yeah. Here's a little overanalysis. Maybe the Federation used these people for trading and dealing in weapons or weapons-grade material so that the Federation doesn't get its hands dirty. So these are kind of the under the table dealing with them. They can supply weapons when the Federation can't.
I'm telling you, it's very 90s weapons deals.
Oh, yeah.
Well, Kira says, I'm sure it's been a long journey, but we have our own problems and you'll just have to wait. But then Sisko comes in behind her saying, stand by, and he clicks off the communicator. He asks for an explanation and Kira says she wasn't done running a background check on that ship yet. When Sisko presses her, she angrily says they just visited Felina 3 and Mariah 4. We always have to put numbers after planets.
Yeah.
And anyway, these are the same two stops they used to make when they were running Dolomai to the Cardassians. So she's not let go of anything from their previous conversation.
No.
She says the last stop would be the purification plant at Ultima Thule. If she can just place them there, then they know the Valerians are up to no good. He leans forward and turns the comms back on, telling Goofy that he's been cleared for docking. He leaves and Kira angrily whirls her chair around. I don't know. I'm with you here. I just don't think this is a good look on Sisko or the Federation. I don't know much about the storyline yet at this point when I was taking notes, but it just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
If they're in league with the Bajorans, I would hope they'd at least be sensitive to the issue, but he just shows no sensitivity to it at all.
Well, I think this might be another tell, because when Sisko overrides her and like leans across and turns the comms back on and lets them dock, he does this without any explanation. And typically what we've seen Sisko do is give an explanation for or a justification for his actions or a reason of why they're doing them. And he would typically let that person carry out whatever the orders were. He wouldn't do it himself. So I think his behavior here is another tell of something's up.
I do think he's a bit of a consensus builder, and he spent no time building consensus in this scene.
Right. When I watched this scene, I was like, wow, he's been kind of jerky. And then like the light bulb went off and went, oh, this is showing us something.
Well, everybody's acting funny.
Yeah.
As we're going to see.
Also, in the scene, you get a lot of close-ups of the side of Kira's face, and you get a really good view of her earring. And it's really quite complex and sort of detailed.
Somehow, I did not even notice. I'm usually the one paying attention to the fashion part. And I didn't even write that down. What did you notice about it?
Well, it's two-part and it's fairly detailed.
Yeah.
It looks kind of cool. That would be a good piece of cosplay jewelry.
Okay. I feel like we used to wear those things. Was that in the 90s? Those earrings that kind of went on the side of your ear.
Oh, so that was just an extension of a 90s fashion sense.
That's what I'm thinking. I think that was the 90s.
Like Morn with his puffer jacket.
Yeah. As predicted, Odo is in Quark's, asking him about some problems he had with the Klingons recently. Quark says, spare me from beings who think pain is pleasure. Then he grossly says, in small doses, perhaps. But the Klingons are hard on the holosuites. Just gross. He says they wrecked the furniture and he's still fixing the walls in Holosuite 6. He says they spend big, but figuring in damage, he's lucky to break even. In this scene, I don't know if you saw this, but there's a decidedly purple alien in a beautifully tailored white costume that's behind them.
Oh.
It's another example of a great costume just for what appears to be a couple of seconds. And I think we see this alien maybe twice in this episode. But
oh, funny.
Yeah. I noticed it because the alien was purple, but yeah. I would like to say in this recording, there are two clicks that have appeared on my screen, and both times it's been because my shoulder has cracked when I moved it.
Oh my God. That's funny to say that because I'm hearing clicks because I'm moving my head.
Oh my God. We're so broken. Who knew old age would make podcasting so hard?
Yeah.
A thing that you don't, you just sit in a chair and do.
I will guarantee there are at least two clicks on my recording for me turning my head and literally hearing my spine go click.
Good Lord.
I heard it in the headphones.
Oh my God. Odo, continuing to follow Quark around, says the Klingons do throw their weight around and bluster. Quark says the latest crew was the worst. He quotes, our glorious mission, and wonders what's so glorious about a biosurvey. When Odo then asks how they responded, Quark finally realizes that he's being questioned. Crafty tonight, aren't we? Looking for clues about the Klingons? He asks what he'll get in return for revealing what he heard. And Odo wonders why he would give him anything. Quark says, well, then I heard nothing. So Odo tries a different tactic, the one he always goes to, saying he'll take the work crew fixing Holosuite 6 and give them something else to do. Quark gives up very easily, revealing that the Klingons said they'd be coming back through the wormhole with something that would make the enemies of the Klingon Empire tremble. Odo says, oh, you've been most helpful, and he leaves. Quark calls after him to not let it get around.
Odo is just on form. I like how he takes the approach of sympathizing with Quark and sort of making Quark comfortable, agreeing with him, saying, oh, yes, isn't it terrible? And they make a mess, etc. And Quark totally lets his guard down. I can't believe that Quark, after all this time dealing with Odo, would just so easily let his guard down and not realize what Odo's doing. It kind of made me laugh.
Well, maybe Odo is usually more upfront.
Ah.
Odo's learning new tricks.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good point.
As he's leaving the bar, Odo suddenly grabs his head and groans. He flips around, looking at Quark, and his face shapeshifts into a blob, kind of, and then back into Odo, and then he falls to the ground. Quark looks moderately concerned, a little bit more grossed out, really, than concerned. He then looks closely at Odo, who appears to be dead, and he runs off screaming for Dr. Bashir. And then we go into an ad break. Very dramatic.
Yes. And we get to see a little of Odo doing shapeshifting this week. Although it wasn't a very impressive effect. It just sort of his head like span round from the sides kind of thing and opened out and folded back. It was sort of an odd effect, but we got to see some.
Yes. Then we go to medical and Bashir is looking concerned. He's scanning what appears to be an unconscious Odo. And then suddenly Odo opens his eyes and Bashir says, whoa, welcome back, Constable. I thought we established that Odo does not like being called Constable, and yet we still continue to do that. We are crappy teammates.
Yeah, there does seem to have been a shift to people calling him Constable when he doesn't really like it. Maybe he's just come to terms with it.
Odo asks, how am I? And Bashir asks, how do you feel? Odo says he feels fine, and Bashir's like, good, because your body chemistry defies analysis, and I have no idea how you are. Odo looks closely at his hands, and he sits up, saying he doesn't remember anything. He asks if he's back to normal, but Bashir just repeats he has no idea. He says, there's really nothing I can do. I don't know what happened or if it will happen again. Super helpful, Julian. Odo says, well, then thank you for your time, doctor, and he gets up to leave. But Bashir stops him and asks Odo if he shares his concern over this Valerian situation. Odo looks perplexed as Bashir says, don't be surprised if the uneasy alliance on this station starts to show a few cracks. Everybody is acting very weird. Something is definitely up. Odo asks, what uneasy alliance are you talking about between Commander Sisko and Kira? Mark my words, there's going to be trouble. Odo is now interested and he steps back into the room and asks what these concerns are based on. Yeah. Bashir kind of smiles and says, very clever, Constable. There's that name again. You're probably right. It's too early to commit oneself either way.
I think Aubergenois does such a good job in this scene because he manages to give an impression of confusion, even under all that makeup. Like, just with the head and the eye movements, the way he moves gives this impression that Odo is initially very confused about what's going on.
Right.
Something that Odo probably doesn't often suffer from, not knowing what's going on.
Right.
But he did a very good job giving that impression.
But also, he's not used to sort of socializing. So I think the whole thing was awkward for him. He didn't quite know what they were talking about.
Oh, maybe.
But then Odo asks if he can leave, and Bashir says, sure, unless you'd like to pour yourself through my phoretic analyzer. I'd love to see the results. It has a faintly sinister tone to it, maybe because of the sinister music playing in the background, letting you know that something suspicious is going on.
Yeah.
Odo says maybe another time and leaves, but he does look back very suspiciously at Bashir before he leaves. I'm not sure what Sisko is doing in his office, but he's leaning over his table with what looks like a pencil. Kira comes in saying, I've got them. Their ship was at the Ultima Thule station 1 week ago. How does time work exactly when everyone is on a different schedule? Like 26 hours in a day on Bajor, so the concept of a week would be so confusing as you traveled around.
Oh yeah, it really would.
Yeah.
I mean, just the daylight hours, you'd be, as a human, you'd be off every, you know, every day it'd be getting more and more off.
Kira has an armed team ready to board the Valerian vessel. We can confiscate the material and send them back where they came from. She marches around his office saying, frankly, I'm tempted to take them to Bajor and press charges. Sisko asks, by whose authority? Kira, annoyed, asks, so you're not going to do anything about this? Sisko, who is still weirdly leaning over the table, says, I'm not, and neither are you. Then he stands up and he flips over this big, I don't know what it is, like a board that was in front of him. Kira reminds him that the ship is acting against Bajoran interests and the station is Bajoran property, which is what we talked about earlier.
Exactly.
But Sisko says that the station is commanded by a Federation officer, commanded by me. Are you challenging that, Major? He looks a bit menacing as he steps towards her. She responds with a, no, sir. And he says, good. This is a little like early conversations between them, you know, way back on Emissary and Past Prologue, where you weren't really sure who was trustworthy or if they were ever going to kind of trust each other. So this uneasy alliance that Bashir was talking about is on display in this scene.
Well, this is the first scene we've seen with Kira, I would say, acting oddly, because do you notice when she came into the office, she did not press the door chime button.
She didn't ring the doorbell?
Yeah, which she's always done beforehand. And she just sort of barged in. There's definitely a shift of, if you've watched Kira to this point, I think there's a change in the body language as well.
Yeah, for
sure. Did you notice how she was sort of doing this almost cocky strut?
Yes, yes, absolutely. I mean, she's always kind of walked with a strut, but yes, she is walking with a little bit more of a, yeah, I guess cocky strut is a good way to describe it.
Yeah.
I guess she's walking with a little bit more determination than what we've seen.
Ah, maybe. There's a shift in her as well. And I thought this was, this scene really
They're
introduced
all
that.
All acting weird. Yeah. Everybody is acting weird. And nobody seems to do anything about it. They just continue on.
It's fine.
Next, we are in the shuttle with Miles and Dax. These two spend a lot of time together in shuttles for some reason.
Yep.
They're checking the debris of the Klingon ship, looking for the mission recorder. This is a good example of something that I don't think they really needed to use a shuttle for. Couldn't they have just scanned for that from the station and then beamed it over? I'm confused on the show, like, why sometimes you don't just send out a probe or why you just don't scan for something. It just seems like we lack consistency in Trek to make the story more dramatic.
Yes, there's a lot of writing for drama, I believe.
Miles says they need to get a little closer. Then he kind of casually says, Major Kira has become awfully aggressive toward Commander Sisko lately about station policy, which feels really out of character for him as well. Like you said, everybody's acting weird. Dax turns and looks at him and kind of shrugs, saying it seems like an honest difference of opinion.
Yeah.
He asks, what if it's more than that? And the Bajorans decide they don't need us on DS9. It is their station after all. Dax is like, well, that would be suicidal. Without the Federation, they'd be vulnerable again to the Cardassians. Miles points out that doesn't mean there aren't a few misguided Bajorans who think they can go it alone. Then the music gets sinister again. We use the sinister music a lot. As Miles says, Dax has become quite friendly with Major Kira. Dax says, have I? I guess so. If you say so. Don't get too friendly with the natives, he says. Remember where your loyalties lie. Dax is just acting like such an airhead. It's so weird. Dax says she's on Benjamin's side because they go way back. Then she starts to reminisce about something, but Miles cuts her off, saying, good. Miles says, anyone who's against Sisko is against me. Even more sinister. And then the console beeps and they found the mission recorder.
He seems very loyal to Sisko in a way we've not seen before. Plus, there's also a very harsh edge as well that we've not really seen with Miles outside very specific situations.
Well, everyone's got a really harsh edge all of a sudden, except for Dax, who's turned into an airhead.
Yeah.
Back in Odo's office, Kira comes in saying, Constable, again. I think she's the only one he tolerates saying it.
Oh, and she comes in with this really odd swaggering walk again. I mean, it's really sort of stylized.
It's very pronounced. He asks if he can help her, and she, in an overly friendly tone, says, oh, you always manage to help me, Odo. And she leans over his desk. I mean, everybody is freaking me out. How does nobody notice? Is she hitting on him? I mean, the whole thing is weird.
She's sort of doing this weird fake charm on him, and it's very not Kira that we've seen so far.
And he's completely perplexed by it.
Yeah, well, clearly he hasn't seen this side of her or whatever
is
happening.
Has. Kira needs his cooperation. She is convinced there is dolomite on board the Valerian ship, but she's only got circumstantial evidence. She needs solid proof. She asks him to slip past their security systems and into their cargo bay. Odo heard that Sisko was adamant about not interfering with the Valerians, and Kira says he's changed his mind, and Odo says, oh, how odd. Finally, somebody notices something is odd.
Yes.
So he says, very well, I'll keep the two of you informed about my progress. No sense in disturbing him, she says. And when he turns and looks at her suspiciously and that sinister music plays again, she smiles and opens her arm saying, she can't fool Odo. He asks if she really wanted him to go behind Sisko's back. And she's like, forget it. It was a bad idea. And she starts to leave. But then she stops and says, if you have to choose sides, just remember who your friends are.
Oh, yeah. They're forming little alliances. They're reminding people who their loyalty should be with. It's,
right.
I'm kind of loving this.
It's creepy.
It's very soap opera-y.
Kind of. After the ad break, Miles is recording a personal log, which even that was weird. He says, we retrieved a portion of the Klingon officer's journal. Of course, Major Kira heard about it immediately. She must have spies everywhere. This is, I don't know, you said you're really loving it, but this is not a fun Star Trek episode. Everybody's freaking me out. The whole thing is too freaky.
He seems a little paranoid.
Yes, well, I guess that's the point, right?
You're right.
We're watching the video of the Klingon logs in Ops. The video is pretty broken up, but the Klingon dude is saying, I believe the captain has gone insane. He executed two more crew members, charging them with attempted mutiny. The sound is breaking up a lot, but he's saying that the violence may be caused by those telepathic energy spheres we brought back from Saltana. Sisko looks bored watching this from a distance, and Dax continues to be weirdly amused by her surroundings. The video breaks up. Kira says their mission must have failed, and that failure caused problems on board. Sisko is like, I couldn't care less what happened to a Klingon ship. Miles points out that the Klingons might be interested. Yeah, I would think so. Dax and Miles have set up a data interpolation to fill in what's missing. Sisko shrugs, if you have to. And then Dax says the search is often reward enough. Just dopey.
Yeah.
And she starts to ask Benjamin if he remembers some wild thing they did sometime a long time ago, but he cuts her off saying, fine, do whatever you have to do and don't bother me with it. Then he goes back in his office. Everyone is crazy. Odo looks around, surprised that nobody is noticing what's going on except for him.
Yeah, I mean, Sisko's never been this petulant in anything we've seen from him. The way he seems just completely bored by everything that's going on, like this is all too much trouble.
Yeah.
I mean, there is definitely something serious happening here.
For sure.
And when Dax delivers that goofy line about the search, Miles turns his head and like looks at her like a great double take. It's like, that really made me laugh. I'm like, that was funny.
They have her saying just all these weird things. Yeah, it's pretty funny. Then we go to Quark's, and Quark is pouring blue liquid on top of an orange and red drink. He calls it a Modella Aperitif and hands it to Dax. She sniffs it as Quark says, he'll put it on her tab. Of course, he has to creep on her a little bit. I'm just going to skip right past that because I'm so sick of it. Kira arrives saying the bad flattery is on the house.
What's funny here is Farrell does just this great job of, if you noticed, ever since that first time where she just like did the funny giggle, she's had just this sort of vacant look on her face.
Yes.
She's just managed to project this great sense of somebody who's really not quite there.
Yes. Dopey.
It's funny to watch her.
It's like she's stoned.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Quark tries flattering Kira too, but she tells him to get lost. He backs away, more accustomed to Dax humoring him, which Kira doesn't
do. Kira's never been that direct to him, I think, before. I mean, she's like given digs at him and sort of being
mean. Yeah, she's taken digs, yeah.
But she hasn't ever just been as direct where she says to him, get lost.
That's true. She's normally, I guess, professional.
Right, yeah.
Kira asks Dax how she is, and she says, you know what they say, put the shoe on the right foot first, but put the left foot first into the bathtub. What? I had to go back and write down exactly what she said. Like, okay. Kira, looking very confused, says, I understand, which is funny, but what I really meant was, are you happy? You're the most valuable officer on the station. Then she takes her weird blue drink and drinks from it, and I thought, is she now creeping on Dax? Why is everybody always creeping on poor Dax? She says, I couldn't imagine running the station without you. Dax, who appears drunk or stoned or something, asks if Kira is trying to tell her something. Kira says, my disagreement with Sisko over the Valerians is no secret. You know how he gets when he's made a decision. Dax says, yes, it's like talking to a stone. Then she starts telling another pointless story that nobody wants to hear. Kira interrupts her saying, you told me that story this morning. Then Kira asks her to contact Starfleet Command and tell them that the Bajorans are unhappy with Sisko. She's like, they'll listen to you. And Dax says, well, I was decorated on my very first mission. And she starts rambling about that story. Dax, we have to keep the Valerians here until we can get the Dolomite off their ship. It's for the good of Bajor and the Federation. Dax continues to ramble, saying Sisko is like a son or a nephew to her. Listen to me, Kira says. I'm getting rid of Sisko one way or the other. Don't force me to get rid of you as well.
Boom. And the hammer drops.
Yeah. And then Quark drops a glass and makes kind of a commotion, obviously eavesdropping. Kira reaches over the bar and grabs him by the lapels, asking what he heard. He says, nothing, nothing at all. And she somehow manages to throw him backwards against the wall. I don't know how from that position she would have had any leverage, regardless of the fact that she's, I don't know, 5 foot nothing and weighs nothing, even if there wasn't a bar in the way. But I have no idea how she could get leverage to do that.
That's because she throws Quark's stunt double against the bar. If you slow it down, it's clearly someone different.
Oh, funny. Well, anyway, she strolls out having threatened everybody in the bar, basically.
Yeah, doing that walk again.
Yeah, doing the Kira walk. Hashtag Kira walk.
At 2334, we see Morn at the bar in this episode. And I have a new statement, which is all hail for the barfly of the prophets.
What is that?
Morn.
From?
I just made that up.
Oh, jeez. Okay. Odo is in his office watching security cameras when Quark comes in with a neck brace. Kira tried to tear my head off and I want to file charges. He says he heard her plotting with Dax against Sisko. Odo asks if Dax was persuaded and he says he couldn't tell. She seemed to be on the fence. Odo says everybody's behavior is out of the ordinary. He lists off Bashir being interested in politics, Sisko being bored about running the station. He turns and looks at Quark, who says, don't look at me, I'm perfectly normal. Odo says he needs to talk to Sisko and heads out. Quark calls after him, suddenly able to move his neck, I noticed.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, what was he trying to run an insurance scam or something? I don't know what that was about.
Yeah, I assume it was some kind of scam, but I like how Odo basically ignores him.
100% ignore. Yeah, don't care.
Yeah.
So Odo comes into ops. Dax is watching the Klingon video over and over. Odo goes into Sisko's office, but finds Miles sitting at the desk. He says Sisko is in his quarters where he's safe. That's suspicious on its own.
Oh, yeah.
He's also watching the Klingon video. The video, which is breaking up a lot, has the Klingon dude talking about hiding a thalmorite device, which I'd never heard before, near the reactor. The words are constantly breaking up, so you don't get full sentences. He says a few other things that aren't totally clear, but does say rather than being taken prisoner, he'll beam off the ship, and their problem started when they opened the energy spheres. This is the second time we've had this clue of the energy spheres. Please, someone take the clue of the energy spheres.
Well, I think the problem is none of them are acting normally, so...
Except Odo.
Well, yes.
Odo looks at Miles, saying, it sounds like there was a power struggle on board. Management by mutiny is standard operating procedure on a Klingon vessel, Miles says, but not so normal on a Federation-run station. Don't worry, Miles says, if Major Kira tries anything, we'll be ready. Odo asks when the rest of the log entries will be ready, and Miles says about 7 hours. Odo thanks him and turns to leave. These computers are so slow on this station. Why would it take so long? It's just one guy's personal logs. Anyway, Miles says, of course, Constable. Again, using Constable. Don't the commander and I always try to make you happy? So creepy. And that same ominous music is playing again.
So they're trying to build an alliance with Odo.
Yeah.
From the Federation side.
Odo just leaves without agreeing to anything, but he does look back at Miles one last time as he walks out. Odo heads to Sisko's quarters, finding two Starfleet officers standing guard outside of his door. They say O'Brien stationed them there. Odo rings the doorbell and goes into Sisko's quarters, and Sisko's sitting on the floor, his feet up on a chair. And again, he's playing with that big board, whatever that is.
Yeah.
He says, "Hello, Constable. How are you today?"
Yeah, he appears to be drawing something on it.
Odo says, concerned, and tries to tell him that things have been weird since the Klingon dude beamed over. Sisko does not seem to care. Odo walks around the table, saying there appears to have been a mutiny on board the Klingon ship, and there are some disturbing parallels going on in the station.
I like how Odo just sort of moves around while he's talking, so we like can get a look and see what Sisko is doing.
Trying to see what he's doing.
Yeah.
Sisko kind of pushes him off to Miles, saying, you know, go and talk to Miles about it. Then he turns around this board finally and shows it to Odo. And he says, what do you think? And he's really excited about it. And Odo asks what it is. Sisko says, it's a clock, in like this really excited voice. So he's been designing a clock on this board. Okay.
And once again, Odo manages to actually convey he's surprised or shocked. Every time Odo...
with his frozen face?
Yeah, it's just impressive to see him do that.
But even now, as he's holding up this thing saying it's a clock, we don't really get a very good look at it. But apparently, he's been spending all of his time designing some kind of a clock.
Instead of running the station, he's spending his time designing a weird clock.
Right. Now Odo finds Kira with her feet up on his own desk. You can always tell things are weird when people are in the wrong chairs or they have their feet up. That's always a clue on TV, isn't it?
Yeah. And she's doing that sort of cocky, charming, kind of trying to be charming thing.
Yeah. She says, it's not nice to keep a friend waiting. Then she does this weird stretch, which I don't know, was that supposed to be alluring? It was so weird. I don't know what it meant. She says, I need your help. I took care of the Valerians. I locked down their docking clamps, and they're not leaving until I say so. It'll take O'Brien a day to do anything about it, and by then it won't matter. Uh-oh.
Yep.
Odo says, so you're going after Sisko and O'Brien, she adds. We need a more reasonable commander from Starfleet that we can control. Otherwise, we go it alone. Then she asks Odo if he'll be able to do what needs to be done. She says, if you want to toss Quark out on his ear, toss him out. If you want to proclaim martial law on the promenade, claim it. The station will be yours to protect with no interference. He might actually like the sound of that. Although I think he's happy picking on Quark. I think he'd be sad if Quark wasn't there.
Yes.
Then he asks what the plan is. And she says, oh, Odo, I trust you more than anyone on this station because you can't be corrupted. But this is a dangerous time and I can't take any chances even with you. So when the time comes, you'll know it. I'll be counting on you. Odo, dude, you are on your own. You better watch out.
Yeah, both sides are trying to entice him to get their support.
So then after she leaves, he tries to call Starfleet headquarters, but the computer says Major Kira has blocked that. So then he tries to call the Bajoran Council and finds that Miles has blocked that. Great. Cut off from everybody.
This scene was a good example of it, but did you notice there's been a lot of close talking in this episode?
Oh, no, I didn't notice it.
Yeah, there's a lot of close-up face shots in this.
Yeah, I did notice that. So then he asks to see the log the computer has been interpolating, and he scans it for mention of contact with an alien race. There's only one entry found, and he plays it back. The Klingon is talking about how exploring the fifth planet was a waste of time. The world is not worthy of a Klingon colony. All we found were a collection of energy spheres which possess some type of telepathic archive. The spheres describe an ancient power struggle that destroyed a race called the Sultanah. He says they will forward the info to their science division.
Well.
There's a clue.
Yes. I think there might be a parallel happening here.
You think? Now we go to Sisko, who appears to be building his clock instead of just drawing it. Miles is giving him an update saying Kira has locked down the Valerian ship and she's taken over half the station. He said he's heard rumors on the promenade that she's going to make an attempt on your life. Sisko doesn't seem too concerned about that. He kind of smiles and says, arrest Kira and every Bajoran on the station. But Miles says there's a lot more of them than there are of us. Then what can we do? Miles says, well, we should leave the station. And Sisko jumps to his feet, shouting, never! Get me a phaser! I'll get rid of Kira myself! It was very dramatic.
Oh, yeah. Avery is just great in this. The way he just goes from that sort of very placid, disinterested clock builder straight into just this furious anger.
Zero to kill.
It's great acting.
Miles says, if we leave the station, we can raise a Federation attack force and return to get rid of all of your enemies. I thought it was very specific that he said your enemies, like not enemies of the Federation, but enemies of Sisko.
It's wonderful to see this bizarre, completely loyal to Sisko Miles, unquestioning in his loyalty.
Yeah, so out of character. Sisko calms down then and goes back to working on his clock. Miles says, I just need a few more hours to keep working on freeing up the Valerian ship. Then they'll take us back to Federation space. Sisko then whispers, call me as soon as you're ready, and Miles heads out. This reminds me of the episode Vortex, where they couldn't figure out how to keep the Miradorns at the station. Why didn't they put the stupid clamps down? It takes a day to turn the clamps off.
Kira is obviously more competent with locking the clamps down than anyone else.
Although I also think if you look back on how you would have watched the show originally, and you're seeing it every week with multiple days in between, and you're not really having the time, I guess, to analyze it. Nobody's doing podcasts on it in 1993 and overanalyzing every detail, although I'm sure people were writing things about it in books and whatever.
I'll guarantee there was a mailing list.
Like a Usenet list or something?
Oh, it might. Yeah, could have been Usenet back then.
Because I just feel like some of these things are so obvious to us because we're paying so much attention to it.
Yeah.
But would I have noticed that when I was watching it back in the 90s? I don't know, but I certainly notice it now. Now we go to medical. Odo comes in to find Bashir giving something suspicious to a Bajoran. When he sees Odo, he says, this will take a few hours to take effect. Plenty of time for you to get a good night's sleep. The Bajoran thanks him and leaves.
Bashir is not very convincing.
No. Odo has come to ask about the Klingon autopsy, but Bashir kind of ignores him for a few seconds, and he says he thinks that things are moving rapidly. Odo better choose sides now or risk having no friends. Odo asks him again about the Klingon, wondering what he found. Bashir says he's still dead, if that's what you mean. And then Odo grabs him and like throws him up against the wall, and he says, I don't have time for jokes. He says, your findings could determine who controls the station. And Bashir asks, how? But Odo is like, all in good time. So he's acting like the others.
Yeah. I like how he did that because it clearly brought Bashir into sort of, if you like, the plot or the story that they seem to be acting out.
He says, first tell me about the Klingon. And Bashir says the only thing he really found was that the membrane permeability in the columnar cells in his brainstem was off. Such science mumbo jumbo.
Made up.
And again, we're looking up at a fuzzy graphic that shows you nothing, but they pretend like it's showing them something. And Odo asks, what could cause that? Could it have something to do with telepathy? The Klingons were studying the telepathic archives of an ancient race. And Bashir says, well, if those archives were in a self-sustaining energy matrix, that could explain the changes in the dead guy's brain. Then Odo wonders if that matrix could have somehow caused them to reenact the power struggle that destroyed the Sultanans. And Bashir says, possibly.
I like how Odo has very clearly figured out how to manipulate Bashir in this situation. I mean, he's kind of figured out what Bashir's character is and is using that to basically get Bashir to do what he wants him to do.
I always like these episodes of Star Trek where one person has to save everything.
Right. That's also a very Star Trek, certainly a Next Generation.
Yeah, very much Next Gen, yeah. Odo thinks the Klingon brought that matrix with him and everyone in Ops was affected, except for him because he has no brain. Bashir says, interesting theory, Constable, but I'm certainly not behaving out of the ordinary. Odo is no dummy. Yeah, and he says, oh, of course not. What if you and I are the only two not affected? And Bashir says, oh, do you think we could use this to our advantage? And Odo nods and says, exactly. Very smart. He says, we have to figure out how to remove it from the people's brains because the power to control the energy matrix is the power to control the station. Bashir says, if I could determine the natural resonance frequencies of this telepathic field, I might be able to generate an interference signal which could drive it out. Do it, Odo says. I promise, Doctor, you won't regret it. And Bashir turns around and gets to work. Backing up, Sisko comes out of his office asking what is taking so long. O'Brien says they're almost there. They have one more level of security lockouts to break before the Valerian ship will be ready to go. Then the Bajoran from Sick Bay comes in, trying to give a report to Sisko. Sisko says, give it to O'Brien. But the dude is like, I really think you should see this. He's holding the right hand pad in front of Sisko, and he brings his left hand up behind Sisko. And he does it so slowly that Miles turns around and sees it, and it's time to yell, Commander. And then Sisko looks back. In all of this time, the guy could have just stabbed him with it, but he doesn't. Sisko looks back and sees the hand, and he sees that there's that device that Bashir gave him in the other scene. It is the whole thing is so terrible. It's so slow and so ridiculous. So Sisko hits the guy and knocks him down the stairs. And then when Dax calls for Kira, Miles just backhands her and knocks her over.
Well, it looks like Dax picked her side.
And Sisko continues to struggle with the guy. He punches him and he asks if Kira puts him up to it. And the guy says no. Sisko keeps beating on him, but somehow there's no blood. It's so stupid.
Well, Sisko really does beat the crap out of him. It shows that Sisko is quite the fighter.
At this point, I noticed that Ops is carpeted because they're on the floor. I'm not sure why, but I was surprised. I was wondering how they're keeping the carpets clean.
Oh, they have a crew that comes in.
Yeah, maybe. Anyway, he finds the device that the Bajoran was going to use on him just as Kira comes in and fires a phaser near his head and says, put it down. And we go to an ad break.
Well, it looks like Dax picked her side.
And so did Bashir.
Although I saw Bashir as somebody who just was looking at the way the wind was blowing. So he really didn't have any loyalties. And that was the thing I think that Odo figured out, that Bashir had no loyalties but to whatever's in his best interest.
I think it's funny that nobody else on the station is like noticing this is going on or doing anything about it.
That is true.
Very weird.
You'd think some of the second level staff, management level, would be figuring out, hey, something's very odd going on here.
Yeah. We come back from the ad break and Kira orders her Bajoran dudes to take them, but Miles beams himself and Sisko away. Kira runs over to Dax and says, you are supposed to deactivate the transporter. And she says dopily, oh, I forgot. I'm not so sure she's that helpful on your side.
Stoner Dax forgot to turn off the transporter.
Oh my god. So Miles and Sisko are walking through a dark hallway. Miles is annoyed because somehow Kira set up a force field preventing them from beaming directly to the Valerian ship. Sisko is like, we have to get to that ship. Miles says Odo is our only chance. Maybe he can override the field. But Sisko wonders if Odo can be trusted. And Miles is like, well, I don't know that we have any other choice. So he calls Odo, telling him that Kira has moved against us. And Dax is on her side. We need your help, Constable. Can you clear us a path to the Valerian ship? Odo gives him directions of where to go, saying he'll help. Sisko tells Miles to take off his comm badge and leave it here. Then he puts his arm around Miles and says, don't look so worried, Chief. She hasn't beaten us yet. Back in Ops, Dax is saying that they're still in Airlock 6. Maybe they've given up. Yeah, right. Kira is like, Sisko would rather die, which is fine with me. Then she realizes they took off their comm badges. Oh my god, this happens constantly. Why are we surprised?
Yeah, that's happened to Dax. It happened to O'Brien. Why doesn't everybody think of this first?
I don't know, because it's very common. Dax notices that someone is taking out their force fields, and she figures out it's Odo. So Kira calls Odo and asks whose side he's on. Odo says, yours, of course. She asks, then why are you helping them escape? Odo says, on the contrary, you'll find him trapped in Cargo Bay 4. Consider it my gift to you. She smiles. Oh, my apologies, and I'll see you there. Odo turns to Bashir and says, we're running out of time. Bashir says he's nearly finished. He set up an ionic interference signal in Cargo Bay 4. It will lock onto the resonance frequencies of the telepathic field and drive it out of anyone affected. So then they all head to Cargo Bay 4.
This was great camera work here. Did you notice how the camera was like down low and shooting up towards Kira? And it gave this sort of great power shot.
Yeah, dramatic.
Of her. Yeah, very dramatic. I thought it was a nice camera work there.
Miles and Sisko are in Cargo Bay 4 and they realize they've been had by Odo. And then Kira comes in pointing phasers at them. Sisko says, so, this is how it all ends. What disturbs me is the ingratitude. I offered you my kindness, my help, my leadership, and this is how you repay me, with betrayal. So melodramatic, it was great.
I do like the little affectations that Sisko was exhibiting.
What do you mean?
He was like agitated, like flicking his fingers, doing these little hand movements when he's with Miles. When Miles was working on the door, Sisko was like pacing and he was like flicking his fingers. And I thought it was a really nice sort of little touch.
Yeah, adding like a different tick that it wasn't his normal self. Yeah.
It sort of reminded me of what Sadiq was trying to do.
Oh, with Vantika.
Not as well, though. With Vantika. And Avery is sort of bringing that out very well, of showing you that there's something very wrong here.
Yeah.
I wonder if Avery added that as just a spur-of-the-moment nuance to the character, yeah, or whether that was actually scripted.
I don't know. That's a good question. Yeah. So we were all dramatic there, but we get even more dramatic when Sisko says, "But you won't get rid of me so easily. Unlike you, I understand history, and my name will blaze across the stars long after your petty treachery has been forgotten." It's like, what does that even mean?
Oh, that's
it
classic.
Reminded me of that crazy scene in Blade Runner.
Oh, the very final one.
What was that actor's name?
Rucka Hauer, Tears in the Rain.
Yes. It reminded me of that. Like, it doesn't even really fit and it has no real meaning and they don't really explain it, but it's so dramatic.
Oh, yeah.
Finally, Odo and Bashir come in and Odo calls for the computer to execute Odo 1. I guess this is his first computer program ever. And a high-pitched noise starts and everyone grabs their heads, except for Odo, of course. It's hilarious to me that Bashir walked in there with him and just let it happen. If he were as devious as everyone else, he would have locked Odo in there and taken over the station himself. He could have vetted everybody out the airlock.
Exactly.
He's still a dope, you know, that's Bashir. Anyway, a blue cloud kind of forms above them, and Odo tells everyone to grab something secure, and then he opens the airlock to shoot the cloud into space, and then he shuts the door. Odo says, "Well, welcome back, everyone," and everybody is very confused and also looking a bit ruffled.
Well, a couple of things here.
Yeah.
Interestingly, I noticed there was also a Bajoran officer standing next to Dax in this scene.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to assume that the telepathic thing affected other members of the ops crew, because there was quite a few people in ops.
Yeah, because he does say everybody in ops was affected. Yeah. That's what Odo says. So he would want everybody there. But did they have everybody from ops there? I don't think so. But I guess they can get them all later.
That's true. They figured out what's causing it. And with them in the right state of mind, they could probably cure it.
Yep.
And the other thing is, doesn't it seem a little bit dangerous to actually open the airlock and flush it out?
Uh-huh.
What if none of those boxes had been
secured?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe you know what? Maybe Odo ran down there and prepared everything.
Oh, that does sound like the kind of thing Odo would do. He is pretty thorough.
He could have flown down there, turned himself into a bird and flown over there.
Yeah. Odo strikes me as the kind of person who would prepare.
Yeah. Sisko is giving a station log saying, "With nothing to contain it, the telepathic matrix is dispersed into space." That's convenient. "And everything in DS9 has returned to normal." Then Kira comes into his office, walking slowly.
If you notice, she presses the buzzer like normal.
Yep. His big weird clock is sitting on the desk, and Kira says, "Did you really build that?" He says, "Apparently so," and he has no idea why. Kira says, "Even though none of us were really responsible for our actions, I still feel like I owe you an apology." And Sisko says, "I think we'll let it go this time." And then they both smile. Such a Star Trek ending.
Oh, yeah.
"I just tried to kill you and take over, but now we're over it and everything is fine." Great.
And then Sisko starts his clock, and it fades out to the end. Like you said, that's such a Star Trek ending. How many episodes has somebody attempted to take over the ship, been possessed by an alien, done something horrendous, and then at the end of it, it's like, never mind, these things happen.
Yes.
You even mentioned about Miles, where he got taken over by an alien.
Mm-hmm. Yep. It's happened many times. Like I said, this is just a hazard of being in Starfleet or on Star Trek.
Yeah. Very true.
Okay. That is the end of the episode. Do you have any over-analysis?
Yes, I do.
Shocking.
There's a few things I wanted to talk about.
Okay.
In some ways, it's kind of sad because the only thing that really remains of that whole civilization is the clock that Sisko built. And that, I assume, was built into the telepathic spheres that the Klingons open. But the history buff in me really does want to know more about this race and what level of technology they were at, that kind of thing.
Yeah, because it doesn't seem like everybody remembered anything.
Yeah, which is sort of a shame.
They should have talked about that at least a little bit.
Yeah, like having memories of it. Because like that awesome Next Generation where Picard lived the lifetime, the flute one, and had all the memories of living in that civilization.
But I know a lot of people like that episode. I found it boring.
Oh, that's funny. I enjoy it. I'm on the like it side.
It was, well, this is not a podcast about that, but it was a non-Star Trek story in the middle of Star Trek. So it's like, I like the beginning and the end, but the stuff in the middle was just like, why am I watching this?
Oh, okay.
Boring.
Okay. Also, there was the prediction of the king, and I assume the leader was a king. That's how I saw him in the story, was that their memory would blaze across the stars. In some ways, that kind of came true, because even though the king in the story obviously lost ultimately, his name, or not his name, but the story was remembered in these people acting out this collapse of the civilization and the end of it. So that's why I'm wondering whether the spheres were actually recorded by the king or somebody in the court remembering what happened. Here's a completely different take. What if these spheres were actually entertainment? What we were actually seeing was a soap opera, that none of it was real, and this was just how this race told stories.
That's the name of the episode, right? The Masks of the Drama.
Exactly. So none of this was actually real. It was just you were watching, if you like, you were watching a VHS of one of their favorite soap operas.
Oh, funny. That's a really interesting thought. I certainly did not consider that.
And also, when they had difficulty beaming that Klingon on board the station, do you think that was because he had the telepathic thing, the energy inside him or on him?
I mean, that's possible. Or it was just because he was doing it in the middle of his ship exploding.
Yeah, I was wondering whether that was actually a plot point or was just irrelevant.
Why do you think that Odo had that scene where he passed out?
I think just to reinforce that it didn't affect him.
Well, but it did. I mean, it somehow knocked him out, but it was not able to, I guess, permeate the membrane or whatever sciencey thing Bashir said.
Well, I assume it was something like that. Like it tried to get into his cellular structure or the structure that makes him up, and it failed.
Because someone should take note of that. That's a way to knock him out.
Yes. I won't give you any spoilers for the future, but
No spoilers.
But I think that's why it had an effect on him.
Sorry, I have more questions. Do you have more to say?
And I think maybe the final thing was I was identifying the classic characters that make up this kind of story. Dax was sort of the old sage or the old advisor to the king. Bashir was the manipulator, the snake in the grass. Miles was the devoted general or bodyguard. I thought more likely a general.
Mm-hmm.
Kira, the usurper. In that wonderful way, she plays it just so sort of cocky and sure of herself. It's wonderful to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then Sisko as the distracted and uninterested king. I almost saw it as blind to the suffering or the goings on of his people.
Which, you know, that makes me really think about your theory of whether or not it was just a play. Because everybody is a little bit of a stereotype. So that's sort of funny.
Right. Yeah.
That's interesting. Good theory.
Thank you.
Is that it for your overanalysis?
I think that's it for this episode.
So what do you think the Klingons were going to bring back making their enemies tremble? What was that? Was it just that they had found a place to make a colony in the other quadrant and that was going to say, hey, look, enemies, now we're actually in the Gamma Quadrant too?
I made the assumption that the Klingons maybe heard rumors or legends or other races might have stories and they picked up some that there was an ancient civilization who had a great power and were a strong world and had weapons and so on.
Yeah.
And the Klingons heard those rumors and went, oh, well, we're going to go there because the stories say they have strong weapons.
Yeah, that would make sense.
So maybe there was also an aspect of the mission. Maybe the cover for the mission was, oh, we're doing a bio survey looking for a colony. So they could, if they found something really good, they could go, oh, we're going to set up a colony world at the same time.
Interesting. And then my last question in this overanalysis section is, why was everyone calling Odo Constable? What was the significance of that?
Do you think that was another tell, another nod to something was not quite right?
Maybe, or I thought it could also just be that if you're trying to form an alliance with someone, you do tend to do that sort of overly familiar thing, at least in fiction. I'm not saying in real life, but especially if this is a made-up story.
Yeah, you've suddenly made me think of something. Odo is the missing character in the story that I didn't identify, who is an extremely strong character who everybody wants or needs to be allied with. So he's filling a role.
He's an outsider.
Yeah.
But a powerful one.
Yeah, exactly. And they're all trying to get his favor. He could swing the balance of power.
Okay. Interesting. Well, those are all my questions. Okay, let's go to women in the future. I don't have a ton to say about women in the future. I think everybody in this episode was sort of on an even scale, which is good. That's all I ask, is that everybody just kind of have the same treatment. There was a tiny bit of creeping on Dax, not a lot, but there was a little bit from Kira, although I don't know, she was sort of creeping on Odo too. I don't know if it was just maybe the way that she was playing that thing of her getting overly familiar with Odo and then with Dax, or, and I maybe read it wrong, but it felt like she was being a little bit sultry, which was sort of strange. Yeah. There's that one scene where she's sitting in Odo's chair and she does that weird stretch with her arm. And I still don't know what it means. I went back and watched it a couple of times and I couldn't interpret what that was about. So I don't know. That was just weird. But I don't think there was anything really strong about positive or a negative about women in the future. So I don't have a ton to say in this section.
Well, I think they were just completely equal in the story.
For the most part, they were.
Yeah.
I don't know exactly why Dax turned into an airhead, but that was just the role she played in the story.
Well, I saw that as the sort of old distracted sage or advisor to the king, who is sort of way past their best and is
maybe
very old and would sort of be living in the past.
Which I guess if the characters were attaching themselves to the different beings that they found on the station, they may have chosen that for Dax because she is over 300 years old. So that might have made sense. What I was thinking too, though, is they may have viewed her as the one with the most knowledge and maybe the most dangerous one. And so they just sort of disabled her by making her dopey. So I kind of thought either way.
Oh, that's funny.
Yeah.
Because I guess if she had been as clever as Dax really is, she could have disabled everyone else and taken over the station. And there would be no story.
Exactly. We've been over really fast.
Yeah. Yeah, I just put on some breathing equipment and vented the entire station.
Right. Okay, I think that wraps it up. So let's go to rating. Thumbs up, thumbs down, or neutral. What is your rating?
I'm going with two thumbs up. I remembered this from my original watching of it.
Yeah.
This was one of my favorite episodes of the first season. I thoroughly enjoyed this.
Two thumbs up.
Two thumbs up. I think because it's so soapy.
Yeah.
So I think you saw the actors being able to play something out of the characters that they normally play.
Yeah.
And it worked so well. This is definitely one of my favorite episodes.
Of the season or of the whole show?
I think of the whole show.
Wow.
Simply because I have such a fond memory of it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think I will also give it a thumbs up. I was definitely entertained, although I was uncomfortable for a lot of it. I didn't like all that stuff with Miles, and it was so sinister and scary. But I liked the resolution, and I liked that Odo kind of figured the whole thing out, and I liked the way he played Bashir to get what he needed. And it was pretty good. I mean, there was some stupid stuff in it, like always. It's goofy Star Trek, but I enjoyed it.
Yay.
Man, we got a lot of thumbs up from me. I'm starting to worry that my negative feelings about Deep Space Nine are going to go away.
I live in hope. As people keep on saying, wait till you get to the later seasons.
Yes. Wow. Okay. That is it for season 1, episode 17. Come back next week for episode 18. We only have 2 left in this season before we do a season wrap-up in a mailbag episode. This is crazy. In the meantime, if you'd like to tell us your own over-analysis of this or any episode, or if you just want to say something nice, please email us at rebingeit@gmail.com or tweet us at rebingeit. Also, check us out on talkthroughmedia.com. You can leave feedback for us there and listen to all of our other awesome podcasts.
Thanks for joining us on the Rebinge Deep Space Nine podcast.
That's it for me.
And that's it for me.